We are so early. It's unbelievable. Like everywhere. Everywhere. And like from an investing perspective, not investment or financial advice, how is AI not the most obvious, easiest investment thesis of our time?
There are so many companies who are going to get 100% obliterated.
How do you optimize the cutting out of BS and just get the key insights and the key information in the brain of the person that wants to put it in their brain in any domain?
Yeah, like, yeah, these are going to fail, but like they're really important and I am obsessed with them.
The only thing they're limited by is by compute and energy and inference and data. But these are all things that you can scale quasi-infinitely.
There exists this artificial machine called venture capital that created this crazy game where people are just willing to light billions of dollars of money on fire just for the chance to see what problem could get solved for humanity that unlocks all of human potential and takes it to the next level.
What does AI ultimately do? It is such a gigantic friction remover. It is awesome for building.
One of the things that I think is really important about Elon's ability to identify the actual problems that need to be focused on, something that I've actually heard said also about Steve Jobs, and there's a quote, I read the quote in the book Radical Candor. I don't remember who they were quoting, but it was basically someone that was saying, that fucking Steve Jobs guy always gets it right.
Yeah.
And they push him on. I was like, what do you mean always? It's not that he's always right at first. It's that he has a process to surface the right thing. And then once it's identified, then to take action on it. And that means that you have to be able to source the right answer from wherever it lives. So Elon does not the source of all of the right things to focus on. Elon is a search engine who is capable of finding the single person inside of his organization who knows what the right thing to focus on and allowing that person to bring that insight to the top. And then once that insight is available, then to recognize it for what it is and then to put incredible organizational focus on that one thing.
Yeah.
And that is just a different and honestly much more egalitarian. Like any stupid employee at Tesla on their first day could be the person who identifies what is the most important problem we need to solve today. Literally someone who has never worked at the company before, knows nothing. They could reshape the organizational goals of the entire company today.
As long as the culture exists for that to come through.
I'm saying legitimately at Tesla, that is a culture that exists.
Correct.
At Tesla. And Elon is the one who enables that culture to be possible. That dynamic of what he's able to use at Tesla and all his, like this is a dynamic that he cultivates in all his companies, is something that he uses to find these, like this is the search algorithm process for finding what is the highest leverage, what's the bottleneck, what's the powerful leverage point. And it's something that applies to lots of things, not just engineering. And honestly, this isn't even, you know, you said earlier that he's applying these insights to politics and to other things. And it's like this engineering process that people say doesn't transfer over, but it's honestly not even a process that's classically accepted in engineering because it requires a lot of comfort with risk, a lot of breaking. Like, you know, someone just the other day was telling me how great the ULA engineers are because they never fail. Like there's a specific type of engineer who loves things that never fail, that it all, you know, you get it right the first time. And that level of discomfort with risk and chaos and like being willing to start two crazy companies that you think each one of them have a 90% chance that they're going to fail. Like, you only have a 10% chance that you're going to succeed on Tesla and a 10% chance that you're going to succeed on SpaceX. And then like super, what does that make it? A 1% chance that they're both going to succeed? Something like that.
Yeah.
And you're willing to just do it. You're like, yeah, these are going to fail, but like, they're really important. And I am obsessed with them and I can't not do them. And we're just going to do them anyways. I think that is something that generalizes and scales to other areas outside of engineering, because it really is a first principles approach that is different than classical engineering, or at least the way that classical engineering gets done at most large organizations. This is the way that engineering gets done at the startup. This is not the way that engineering gets done in big companies. And he's just managed to preserve that process all the way as, you know, his companies have scaled up and then into new areas.
Yeah. Which the most fascinating thing about that is that there's a track record of that working in multiple domains, which implies that there's no, in theory, there should be no domain where that approach is not executable, which implies that something like Doge, as long as you are able to execute against the goals of that agency in the way you would do a Tesla or an X or a campaign effort or et cetera, whatever, right? As long as he's able to do that, then in theory, you're going to get some outsized results out of that approach, which implies two things. Number one, the United States becomes fundamentally a giant force towards growth and advancement of technology and the mobility of the population upwards by enabling entrepreneurship and amazing technology and job growth and job creation and rising wages, right? And lower costs. There's so many different things. You lower the burden of the individual on the government's ability to pay its debt and pays for itself, right? You do so many different things. So the American public becomes significantly more empowered. But then the second order effect of that is that you also have a blueprint, again, that more people will be exposed to, that says, holy shit, they were actually able to do this again. And so this culture starts to seep in. I hope this is optimist Farza coming out. My hope is that there are more and more people view the whole story arc of Tesla, SpaceX, X, political thing, Doge, and they're like, holy shit, look at the incredible change we've been able to see in all these different areas, self-driving cars, humanoid robots. Like, it doesn't matter where it is. For some reason, this guy is in the center of all of it, and there's this approach he has, and he makes all of these things successful. And each one gets to a bigger pie. So like, how many individuals, how many entrepreneurs are going to view that and be like, okay, I'm going to do that too. I'm going to take 80%, 90% of the learnings. We try to do this with this channel. However shitty it looks on the front end, on the back end, we're trying all kinds of crazy shit. This right here is like us. I don't even know. Like, we're trying to adopt some of those thought processes of fail fast. Don't forget, you know, don't worry about iteration, but more importantly, ask the right questions, worry about first principles. Don't be afraid about emotions. Just fucking push forward, right? Like, we're trying to apply some of those core learnings, but the masses, in theory, are going to be exposed to that as well. On top of something like a Doge opening up the door and creating a forcing function for people to want to take those risks. So it's like taking the risks with the Elon effect of business building or building in general, in theory, should have a multiplying effect on, again, growth and entrepreneurship in the coming decades than what we had in the past. So we're going to go from like completely subdued and overregulated within the confines of the United States, right? We're still doing a lot better than most countries in that respect, but who's to say that we didn't have this artificial roof on top of us, you know, that said, you know, instead of growing 3% per year GDP, maybe you should be growing 10% per year. Like, I get it, but guess what? Are you harnessing AI maximally? Are you empowering people maximally? Are people feel like they can take risks at the highest level possible? Do they feel like they can succeed at the highest level possible? Are they educated at the highest level possible? Do they have access to resources at the highest level possible? Like, no, of course they're not. Okay, so why are we just saying, oh, if the GDP growth is 4%, that's great. It's like, why? That's a stupid question. Like, the question should be, what could be the largest GDP growth this country can have if all things were addressed that would power that GDP growth? And that is what has me so fucking excited about the next 4 to 10 years. It's like, the formula is there. The variables are there. Now it's just like, fingers crossed, like, please, come on. Come on, Doge. Come on. Come on. It's like, we are one giant execution away from having that insane future that feels like too good to be true, but is it really? You know, layer on top of that, artificial intelligence, layer on top of that, humanoid robots, layer on top of that, self-driving cars, fucking super cheap energy, you know? Oh, it's a new dawn. It's a new day. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It's hard not to get excited.
It is. And I mean, the speed at which artificial intelligence breakthroughs are happening right now, it really is mind-blowing. I have been feeling for a while just that we already passed the singularity, and that, you know, we're in the, you know, you've gone over the event horizon and now you're just accelerating into the black hole as quickly as possible, and you don't know like what's in front of you. You can't see, you're just going, and that's what it feels like. I mean, we have seen rumors that OpenAI has figured out, you know, their O3 model is like excelling in all kinds of domains. That it's,
did you see Sam poured cold water on that? He's like, lower your expectations by 100x. Did you see that? Okay. You don't trust anything he says.
I don't know. Yeah. So one of the just the benchmarks that we've seen, there are questions. You know, did they, like, the coding benchmark, it reached 70-something%, which is like top 5% human coder level, or 10%, something like that. You know, it's definitely upper level human coder abilities. Maybe it just had the test results, and so it was easier for it to, you know, train on the actual test. But we've also seen it do really well in a whole bunch of medical contexts. There was, I was reading a bunch of David Shapiro posts on X over the last couple of days, and he was making a strong case that they have figured out how to generalize beyond the training data, which is a big breakthrough. On there was some specific some domain specific problems that it had to figure out, where they were able to exceed the performance of domain experts on things that you had, like, if you were not a domain expert as a human, you would not be able to do the problems. And the implication is that, you know, there's not data in the training set that can tell the thing how to solve that. And so in order for it to solve those problems at domain expert level, it had to extrapolate from data beyond what it knew and kind of generalize, which is impressive. But then we know that Grok 3 just finished training yesterday. Elon's playing around with it. They're trying to make it also work with super lightweight inference models. Like, then China releases this DeepSeek model that's as good as OpenAI's O1 model almost, and it does chain of thought reasoning. And, you know, this, like, O1 literally just dropped, and now China has a open source free version of it that's way cheaper instantaneously. Like, across all these dimensions, things are, the capability of the core technology for the people who are at the very bleeding edge is extremely advanced, and it's advancing rapidly. There's not anyone with a clear lead at this point in time. I do think that XAI has the potential, when we see Grok 3, to develop. You know, they've been catching up. I think that they are neck and neck, and then over the next 12 months, we'll probably pull ahead in a decisive way. And if all that's true, like, we are at the dawn of the golden age of intelligence, that we're going to be, like, we're moving. And this was, I think this was David Shapiro's term. He called it the age of cognitive superabundance, that problem solving capacity, that thing that we have that we can apply to solve problems, is now becoming an abundant, essentially free resource. Like, what problem do you have in your life? You can probably talk to an LLM and it can solve your problem tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's and crazy. The implications of that are absolutely, absolutely nuts. And this is where, you know, is why we focus so much on Elon, because he's got a number of key properties right there at the edge of that frontier on, you know, both for the AI research, but then Tesla with full self-driving and applied embodied AI, and then
physical Optimus and digital
coming right behind it. And yeah, so it's just like, we are at that moment where it's super hard to understand. Like, Optimus is going to be a platform to do work. AI LLMs are going to be a platform to solve problems, just like the smartphone was a platform to serve you digital interfaces for cloud computing.
Yeah.
Over the last decade. And those platforms are going to change everything faster than everything changed for the last 15 years.
The thing that I've been so like trying to solve at a root level, like with this thing that we're building, this channel, this media company, or whatever you want to call it, is like, and this like, and really banging my head against the wall with artificial intelligence on how to solve this problem in the back end, is how can an individual, if they so choose, like, how can you, like, what is the best way to present the most valuable information in any domain as precisely and as maximally absorbable as possible, so that the transfer of key knowledge from the ether to an individual is maximized, right? Essentially, how do you optimize the cutting out of BS and just get the key insights and the key information in the brain of the person that wants to put it in their brain in any domain? And that's to me feels like such a huge exponential for creation in the future, whatever that is, physical creation, digital creation. It's like for humans, right? Because here's the crazy thing. The AI can, this is where it gets weird. The AI can just do that once we have the agents or the AGI that just chooses to do that. There could be an AGI that just says, I'm just going to ingest the most important things about everything. Like, okay. Well, a human could be like, I want to do that too. But I want to do that about artificial intelligence. I want to do that about cooking. I want to do that about blah. And that already exists, right? There are channels out there that do a really good job with that, but they're humans, right? So they're rate limited. How are they rate limited? They're rate limited by their personal experience, and they're rate limited by how much content they can create with their physical body. But artificial intelligence is not limited by any of those things. The only thing they're limited by is by compute and energy and inference and data. But these are all things that you can scale quasi infinitely, right? Outside of data, because you're limited by reality. Unless, again, you create simulations that, anyway, well, this is where it gets weird.
Yeah, right? And I mean, Elon says that video data is, you know, you can scale that quasi infinitely, because if you can take videos at the very large scale and the very small scale and go anywhere and everywhere in the universe, then you can collect all the data that exists in the universe.
Yeah. And it's like, is there value in an AI training on simulated data that's not part of the real world? That becomes a question. Is like, how much value does that really bring? You know, and this is getting esoteric now, but it's, that's been my fascination with AI as of late, which really speaks to like this thing, like, hey, like, I'm actually trying to solve this problem. I'm actively working with different AI tools that are trying to solve the problem of how can I maximize quality information to my audience in, you know, we'll start with this domain that we're experts in so we can check and ensure that this is actually good. But then like once that's a scalable, right? It's like, but if you can do that, you can do anything. If you can solve that, you can solve anything, right? So it's like, and it feels like that's going to be solved next 12 months, maybe less, you know? There was a post from Chamath that I saw on X today where he said that Chinese thing with the O1 equivalent performance at way cheaper price. Let me pull up the exact post. What did he say? He said something about it's proof that being on the cutting edge of the model is a waste of money. AI model building is a money trap. What you are seeing here is a feature of modern AI models. There is no bounding law like Moore's law where advances can be predictably expected, nor has any model builder adequately publicly explained what to expect sans jargon and BS. What this means is that it's very difficult to plan spending programs to create advances and will likely render entire months and possibly years of energy, hardware, R&D, OPEX, and CAPEX wasted and useless as new innovations are discovered. Open source is the clear winner. Closed source will be forced to keep their best model secret and sell to enterprises or try to create some incredible consumer app with it. Having done this before, my lived experience is that this is easier said than done. Net-net, consumers will win with many venture-funded efforts will not, right? So that's that's the crazy part. It's like, okay, so now we're getting to the point where it's like compute and being able to access the AI is going to become so commoditized and cheap that this is actually going to become true, where anybody and everybody is going to be able to solve whatever problem they're looking to solve. It will start with digital and then we'll move to physical over time. It's wild. It's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like this massive competitive space where, you know, people are just throwing cubic amounts of cash at this problem, competing like mad. And all the data on the field at this point looks like you're just buying a ticket to the next round of money burning. But to Chamath's point, but consumers are winning. Like people using this stuff are winning.
We're winning.
And we're winning. Yeah. So I think that's an incredible fact about the market, you know, like capitalism, markets, the possibility of infinite games, that like there exists this artificial machine called venture capital that created this crazy game where people are just willing to light billions of dollars of money on fire just for the chance to see what problem could get solved for humanity that unlocks all of human potential and takes it to the next level.
Yeah.
And like, we don't know how many billions of dollars it's going to take for us to burn, but there's enough people that have faith that we're going to solve the problem, and that when we solve the problem, it's going to make everyone on Earth's life better, that they're willing to just keep doing it. And then those of us who don't have billions of dollars to contribute to the cash burning party to enjoy the benefits for $5 a month, $10 a month, free $20 a month. You know, there's so many different services that you can use now.
Yeah. The trend that is happening in this space right now is actually making me quite optimistic about the future of artificial intelligence. It's like, it does seem like as long as there's competition, which there is ungodly amounts of competition right now, which is like, okay, what are we seeing? Like you said, a plummeting of price per token, or just price per compute unit, whatever you want to call it. It's like literally there are tools now that I am using. Shout out Replit.com, not a sponsor, but if you want to be, hit me up. Replit.com, it's basically an AI coder, okay? And you can just type it, I want to create an app that does this, that automatically transcribes this, automatically summarizes this and does this, blah, blah, blah. And it just makes it for you. Not perfect. You have to play with it. You have to like keep following up a few times to like make sure there are little errors that are addressed. But there are so many different tools that you can create with something like that just for your small business that would have been, you would have to spec out to like an actual coder or some sort of firm or some sort of consultancy firm to help you create that. You would have to hire a coder for your team. Now it's like, I don't know, I pay $4 in tokens or something, or $5 in tokens after like a couple hours of work or whatever. And all of a sudden I got the app that I need. And I don't have to have any, like, it helps to have coding experience. It helps, like, I have a coding experience. I coded in SQL. I mean, a lot of coders will be like, SQL's not coding. It's fucking querying, blah, blah, blah. All right, whatever. Keep that to yourself. But as long as you understand sort of logic and you can kind of sort of read code, it's already like a gigantic value add, because at the very least you can iterate on so many different ideas and so many different functions just for your little tiny business. And it's just there. It's just there for you to use. You know, and this is like version one. What is the
version? And if you had to hire a person to do that, it would have cost you 100 times, you know, at least 10 times more, if not 100 times or 1,000 times more, to accomplish literally the exact same, like to get the exact same end product.
Not only that, but it would also cost you so much time and heartache and so much banging your head against the wall and asking yourself, why am I doing this? I hate this. Why am I doing this? And like, what are one of the biggest things that prevents people from like achieving their goals? It's these walls that are in the way.
Friction.
Yeah, exactly. And what does AI ultimately do? It is such a gigantic friction remover. It is awesome for building. It's so good. It's so good. And it's so exciting. So this is going to become common knowledge. I was talking to my buddy today, Keith. He's been on the show a couple of times. My buddy Keith, Georgia fan. They got spanked by Notre Dame. So did Penn State. We'll keep that to the side. But the by the way, congratulations, Buckeyes. Psych, fuck you. I hate you. But actually, congrats. Whatever. You deserve it. Best team in the country.
Hey, Big Ten.
Yeah, Big Ten. That's right. Back to back. Michigan, Ohio State. Next year will be Penn State, and then Oregon will get their turn one day. Don't worry, Hans. It'll come soon. Okay? Just keep your chin up.
Hey, the only team we lost to this entire year was a national champion.
That's fair. You know what's funny? Penn State lost to Ohio State, they lost to Notre Dame, and they lost to Oregon. They lost to the number 1, 2, and 3 teams in the country. Which, what does that make us, Hans? Losers. Okay. What was I talking about?
You're talking to Keith about what Brooklyn's going to do.
Yeah, yeah. So he is a consultant by trade. And I was like talking to him about this concept of AI. And it's like, And so like he follows the space, but he's not like giant nerds like we are that are like, you know, so knee deep in this that, you know, it's like, it's almost laughable. But my whole thing was like, Keith, I bet you, if you really wanted to, you could do it today, but it'd be clunky as hell and it would hurt. But if you wait like 6 to 12 months, you could probably spool up your own consultancy company where you don't really hire coders or nothing or project managers. You are the front face of the company and the program manager and the project manager, and you just build all these AI agents or leverage all these AI agents to do the work for you, and you deploy your solutions to small and medium-sized businesses with a value prop of like, hey, I can give you consulting services that your Deloitte's and your KPMG's can give you, but I will give it to you for 1,000 times cheaper because my labor cost is compute, it's not humans. And by the way, these agents and things can build these things at a much faster rate and much more accurate rate and much more cost-effective rate than any of these companies could ever do. And I'm going to focus on the small and medium businesses, number one, because that's a huge TAM, but number two is because you're probably the ones that are most in need. And you're the ones that are going to give me the biggest opportunity long-term because you have the most TAM ahead of you, right? Sorry, Keith, I just gave away your idea.
Yeah, his AI agents will be at least 100 times less douchey than the KPMG and the Deloitte consultant.
A lot less entitled, that's for damn sure. But, you know, it's like we're there. Somebody could spool, I bet you those companies already exist. We don't even know they exist. They just haven't, you know, ChatGPT and Grok and Perplexity, not even Perplexity, but like Grok and ChatGPT, to a certain extent, like these are like the mass market AIs. But like, number one, not like some people definitely use it. I'm starting to realize more and more people in my circles that aren't really techies are starting to use ChatGPT, but like they're not using Replit, they're not using FSD, They don't have a human or robot in their house. You know what I'm saying? They're not using these countless agents that are going to pop up in the coming years. They're going to transform how they interface with the world, both digitally and physically. We are so fucking early. It's unbelievable. Like everywhere. And like from an investing perspective, not investment or financial advice, how is AI not the most obvious, easiest investment thesis of our time? Especially the ones that have a profitable model.
I think this is one of those places where it is interesting and hard. Like on the one hand, you could say yes, like the dot-com bubble was 100% obvious. That's why so much money rushed in.
Yeah.
Now the people early. Who were able to survive the valley of death. So I think it's knowing who are the investable companies, who are the survivable companies. And it's because there is so much creative destruction going on here. There are so many companies who are going to get 100% obliterated by, like, you can build a company today and one algorithmic breakthrough tomorrow makes your entire business just vaporized in an instant. So like, those are the things that make it hard. It's like, you know that AI is going to win, but you don't know which one's going to win. This is why, obviously, we like to invest on the horse with the best track record of winning. We want to, you know, have the guy who wins and then wins and then wins some more, because he knows how to identify what's the right thing to be right about. I don't care about all those other things. I just want to know what's the one right thing that I have to be right about. And I'm going to be right about that. And, you know, if you invest in him, I think you have a much higher chance of surviving this coming wave of, you know, creative disruption and destruction that is going to wipe out so many different things. But yeah, it's like, as we make intelligent computer, as we make computers more intelligent and powerful, those computers going to do more and more work. Are they going to make humans more productive? Well, duh, of course they are.
Yeah.
So yes, that's the investment opportunity. That is where, you know, the market wants to provide the most funding and capital to the thing that's going to provide the most returns, which is going to be the thing that grows productivity the most.
Yeah. It's like, if I look at, I just looked at the NASDAQ from back in the day, the dot com bubble. I can never say it correctly. Even when I try to say it correctly. Anyway, 1600 was pre pop, and then 4700, 4800 was at the peak. So it was like a 3x on the NASDAQ. And that was within the span of a year and a half. So think about that. The NASDAQ tripled in a year and a half. Just crazy. It's like, okay, so yeah, if I see something similar happen with the AI bubble. So if NASDAQ goes to 45, because pre-COVID it was 15, it goes to 45. Okay. We probably price it in too quick, unless, not investment or financial advice, unless the realization of AI's value actually keeps pace or outpaces the value generated that the market thinks is going to generate by that time. And that's what the AI discussion is so fascinating, is because AI is a self-fulfilling flywheel. Like, AI will be the thing that generates more value for AI. You know, it's like, you can leverage that tool that's creating value to make it make more value. You know, in with the internet, you still had the human in the loop. The human had to figure out how to create the value. The human had to create the website. The human had to create the service. They had to create the app. But with AI, you can make the AI make the AI and make it better. You can leverage, like, there's a multiplier function on top of it. And that's where it gets weird. It gets so weird, because, again, the reason why we're going to the bottom is because of competition. But at some point, in theory, someone's going to get to a point where they have this recursive flywheel that is self-improving, that person or team hits that first. And then what happens after that point? Theoretically, there's going to be a separation between player one and, you know, player two to 1,000, because they got there first. So by default, unless everyone else, and then maybe that's the game. It's like, well, I can get better faster than you can. You know, it's like, well, I can get better, faster than you can. And it becomes like, okay, who's going to win the exponential battle of exponentials? You know?
The person who has the most speed. And that's, you know, this is why I think Jensen has continued to surprise the upside for so many people, is because he identified that trend really early.
So
and has just early. Been hammering away on that one thing. And, you know, he's just making better chips faster. It's like every year he comes out with something that just makes everything else that came before it essentially obsolete.
Yeah.
The overall growth in computing power in his AI accelerators makes Moore's Law look silly.
Yeah.
And that's that was his insight. And then he's like, okay, once we start developing this intelligence, let's do two things. Let's pour back into trying to make the next generation of the thing we do better. So we're going to go for internal productivity gains using the technology that we've developed. And then the other thing we're going to do is we're going to try and seed the world with, you know, let 1,000 flowers bloom. We're just going to make this as easy as we possibly can for as many different people to use it in as many different ways as we can possibly think of to help them use it. And then we don't know which one, like, we don't know how to pick what industry is going to be the right next industry that just goes bananas because of AI. So we're just going to try and make all of them work better with AI. Bunch of them, it's probably not going to work out that great, but then there's going to be a few big ones that are going to be so big. It's like venture capital for AI powered solutions for business problems.
Yeah.
It's like, we're just going to make, you know, that's why CUDA is so great, is because it has been refined for specific use in as many different applications as people at NVIDIA have been able to think of. And anytime they think of a new one, well, then they add that to the list of things that CUDA can do. And that's why the exponential curve for NVIDIA hasn't really slowed down, even though people are like, oh, you know, this is just a bubble. This is just Cisco. No, they continue to actually grow those product. Like, the revenue keeps showing up. The multiples keep proving that they were not that high after all.
Yeah. When
profits and sales and everything hits the books. And, you know, so Jensen understands this. I think these are the same types of dynamics that Elon understands. But I don't think there are that many CEOs who really understand these exponential curves and these exponential technologies and how to this razor sharp focus on the exponential.
I think they understand it. They're just too, they don't want to go through the pain. They don't have the tolerance to go through the pain, or they don't have the energy to even get it going because their life will be disrupted. You have to disrupt your life to execute that. And again, like, what?
Yeah.
This is such a fascinating discussion. It's like, the limiting factor here is the human. The limiting factor is the human. What happens in a world where creation is made by AIs and not humans? Like, the limiting factor of the AI. Okay, the friction, the conversation of friction. Okay, this could be like the thing. It's like, well, okay, so just give it to the AI. The AI will figure it out. Just let the AI do it. You want to like super optimize or just give it to AI? Of course, I'm oversimplifying it, but it's like, If the leader is identifying the human as the point of friction, which literally that's the case in everything when there's friction, it's always the fucking human that's in the way. Or either because they're not able to find the right answer or they're not asking the right question. The human's always the friction point. How do you offload, like, this is what I'm constantly thinking about. How can you delegate that limit to the AI? Because the AI, by default, it doesn't have that as a limiter. It's not a human. It's a machine. Like, okay, so machine, I'm going to ask you to optimize for the creation of things where the human will be the limiting factor, or the solution of things, or the questioning of things. You know?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I know that Jensen has spoken a lot about how he uses AI, and it's usually about reframing problems that he's thinking about or accelerating a learning process on, you know, something that he needs to get brushed up on. I don't know how much he is using it for, like, you know, delegating tasks to it that he would normally have to do, but you can think about the fact that, like, his entire job is delegation. So if he needs to delegate something, he's got any number of the smartest people in the world, you know, on speed dial to delegate to. So it's like, yeah, I don't know what all things he can't delegate other than expanding his knowledge of the key, like whatever the next thing is, the key next problem to solve. And so I think accelerating that learning process really, really is a powerful leverage point for someone like that.
100%. But here's my head goes to, okay, so by default, the smaller company is going to have an advantage because Jensen has to go through that process. Jensen has to figure out, like, okay, like it's not as obvious how you can leverage AI in a large organization than it is in a small one. Because in a small one, you only have, like, if I were to think of you, me, David, and Larry, let's say that's the four, right? You know, like, okay, who's going to have an easier time finding opportunities for AI to scale their business? Are we or is NVIDIA? I bet you we can get to 100x a trillion times faster than NVIDIA can leveraging AI. Because the path of resistance to find where AI is useful is a lot shorter and easier to navigate than a 10,000 person company or however long. You know, as fast as Tesla or SpaceX are, we can 100x a million times faster than they can. I mean, because we're starting from a much lower, smaller base. But again, there's much less variables. And this is where I think there's a giant advantage in small businesses moving forward. Like, if I'm thinking about scaling this operation, it's like, I can't envision myself having more than 20 people that I work with long term. Like, 20, even 20 sounds too big. I might just cap it at 8. You know, like why? Why do we need so many people? Just, there should just be a trillion small companies. You know, there shouldn't be like 10 large companies. There should be like a ton of small companies where the individuals that congregate to build that company are optimally paired to be super complementary and maximize for AI being useful in those teams. You know, dude, I can't tell you how much time I've spent fucking thinking about this shit. It's like it's so obvious that's where we're going. It's just getting it to actually work is like, ah, like I wish I could just hit like, I wish I could just put this entire fucking video in GPT and be like, just, or Grok, just tell me what to do. It's so hard. The human is the limiting factor, dude.
And our time factor. And our, all the things that are competing for our attention and all of our other responsibilities and stuff.
I love my wife. I love my kid. Like, I want to spend time with them. Yep. I can't like think about this 24/7 as much as my brain wants to. Like, I will collapse into a dying star in like 72 hours if I think about this for too long. But then taking it back up is hard. You know, it's like.
So zoom out, you know, yourself 5 years in the future, knowing the things that you know today and the things that you think are going to happen. Like, what does the economy look like? What are the successful companies and how did they become successful and what impact did they have?
So I think it's going to be a lot easier in the future to cater to people's needs. I think that there's going to be an explosion of companies like it and the internet did this. Obviously, what the internet did is it put jet fuel on business creation that would address micro needs or, you know, whatever. Like, you have an app and a business and a service that kind of handles each individual part of your life, right? I think AI takes that way, way further. I think it, like, it explores areas that we don't even know we needed, that it's going to take that to the next level, right? Apple and Tesla and all these other companies, like all these giant companies that have built new things, like the iPad is the perfect example. It's like, nobody wants an iPad. it's called an iPad for God's sake. And then it's like, okay, well, tablets are pretty fucking useful in a lot of different cases, right? It's like you're inventing new places, new things, new products, new services. This is where I think AI is going to take it to a really, really, like really extreme level. And I think there's going to be all these like micro things that AI is going to solve for. But what's very interesting though, is like, again, depending on what company is handling that domain, I think in the digital world, it becomes a lot easier to have millions of companies that solve for very small things. But in the physical world, it's completely different because you need a manufacturing system. So it's like in the physical world, I think we might have a Walmart situation where it's going to collapse down to the one that can offer the best combination of cost and service and product. Which in this case, it looks, I mean, Tesla looks far and away the best position to do that with the combination of its manufacturing process and its AI expertise and the culture and the leader. Like those things together gives it the perfect formula to do that, in my opinion. But in the digital world, it becomes a race of like who can do compute at the cheapest level and how can you democratize the access to super powerful AIs where people that want to ask the question or people want to build something on that layer to provide a solution to people using AI as the service provider, if that company hasn't done it already, right? That becomes like a thing, but it's hard to, my honest answer is, I don't know. My honest answer is, I don't know. Like I'm trying to me, like the thing I'm trying to solve for is like the maximum, how fast can I deliver quality information to an individual? In as many domains that I can. That's whatever. Like that is the ultimate question I'm trying to ask for, given that I already have a platform that I have. Like, how can I just make my audience smarter? How can I make my audience capable of ingesting more information? How can I make it more plentiful, more relevant, more contextual? Does that mean like we make 10 videos a day? Does that mean we make one incredible video a week? I have no idea. Like the formula is already there for a lot of channels that do it. But if I knew the answer, like I'd be doing it right now. But instead I'm on a podcast with Hans, you know, which is just as fun, to be honest. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, I think you are I think the intuition around using these tools to sift information, try to, you know, get down to as close to the base level of facts as possible. You know, that's not something that most people think that AI can or should be involved in the process of. Like that's, you've got kind of a different counterintuitive, apparently, you know, if the rest of the world is any indication, belief about that. And I think that that's very interesting. And you are definitely engaged in, you know, trying to build that thing. And that's highly, highly, highly valuable, especially as, you know, as we come to swim in a sea of information that is ever deeper and deeper and deeper, like trying to figure out which of that information is relevant to you right now. Yep. And as accurate as possible gets to be a more and more difficult problem. So I think that's one of the key challenges. And then like the flip side of that is, well, hey, if you know, the businesses that are going to be the most successful are the ones that successfully solve the most challenging problems. So I think there's something there, and that's definitely part of the process we're trying to figure out how to make a dent in. I don't know. Like, I don't know. We're just four random dudes playing with technology. We'll see if we can figure something out on that front. On the one hand, it feels like, man, there's so many people who are so smart that have so many resources who are focused on this thing. But like the truth that Elon makes readily apparent is that all of that is baloney sauce. Like what you need is to understand what the right problem is to solve and then just to start. And then once you start, you know, if you get it close enough to write to where you land on the real first principles version of that thing, that then, and you just keep pushing on that, that you can solve it. So I think that it's possible that, you know, we could develop something very, very, very valuable.
Yeah.
So that's fun. I think the other area, this is not something that we're necessarily working on, but I think one of the big areas that I do know people working in this area, and it just like hit me as you were talking, that it's going to be such a valuable service, is there's going to be this existential crisis as things become so much more abundant, like products and services become so abundant, and we're just drowning in this like sea of choice of products and services to consume. What is it that I'm supposed to do? Like, what is my contribution to this? How do I find? And so I think that one of the big cottage industries that will flourish in this new era is going to be one that just takes people on that journey of self-discovery to define what is it that makes them really come alive and feel that energy and that life force and that vitality when they just go and, like, it's like, what is the problem that they were specifically suited to solve with the maximum amount of energy and intensity? And like, they just, when they finally find that thing, like, it captivates them and they're just completely obsessed. It's like, that is something that's, you know, when, if we go back, you know, 1,000 years, 2,000 years ago, and like 80% and 90% of all humans, their job was to take care of animals or cultivate plants, like, that's it. How many, you know, what percentage of the human population got to solve the problem that they were uniquely capable of solving?
Yeah.
Probably wasn't that many. And like, today, the greatest percentage of humanity gets to do that that's ever existed in all of history, but it's still a tiny fraction of what that's going to be 100 years from now if things go well. And so I don't think that this process of discovery of what that unique value proposition is, I don't think that process is very well defined and refined yet. I think this is, you know, you've tried to go on this journey. I've tried to go on this journey. A lot of people, it's like, once you finally solve your financial needs to a level where then you can ask this existential question, it's like, okay, I don't have to do anything. Why am I here? What is it that I'm supposed to do?
Yeah.
That's a luxury question to get to ask. And we're moving into a period where more and more people will experience the luxury to ask that question. But because it's been such a niche question and a niche problem, I don't think that there's a widely disseminated and well-developed way to do that. And, and so I think there's going to be an opportunity for people to really move into that space. And that is going to be so, like, it's scary, but it's also going to be so cool when, like, more people get to wrestle with that question, because that, I mean, that is a terrifying question.
It is. Yeah. And it's coming. It's like, it's 100%. I think that that is such a brilliant thing you just went on. I think the weird thing about the AI age is that it's going to give a giant rise in spirituality and religion and purpose finding, like a 10xing, you know, because as people try to find, as people try to find purpose, they're going to look for places that give them purpose. Like the reason why these concepts have been around for so long is because back in the, you know, here's a theory Like, people have asked, why, you know, why is religion down in so many Western countries? It's because people haven't had the chance to question why they're here. Because they're busy making money, and they're busy trying to win in capitalism, and they're busy trying to make a life that is worth living by generating an income and going out there and making stuff happen and acquiring the things to hit that thing that they're looking for. You know, it's like achievement, goal seeking, whatever it is, right? But once that's done, like once that is not really a thing you have to do anymore, because anything and everything you ever wanted, you can just have or reach or hit by leveraging technology, in this case, artificial intelligence in both the physical and digital world, then that hole is going to come back. That weird hole that humans have, which is meaning, that will come back 1,000%. And it already has. And I can speak from experience, just my own journey of like trying to figure out what am I supposed to be doing, which is something that I still battle with. And, you know, I've been in this journey for like how many years? When did I stop working? 2021. So it's 2025. I'm still not sure if this is like, I'm fumbling through. I'm like, you know, I got something figured out. Oh shit. Now this thing is, oh my God, I got that. Okay. Now what about this? Then I have a child with my awesome wife, beautiful, gorgeous, best woman in the world. I'm like, oh my God, what the fuck? Everything changed. Holy shit. This is what it means to be. Okay. So it's like, there's so much to figure out about reality when you're not actively worrying about paying your bills and buying a house and paying for food. And you're 100% right. What a luxury life that we live, right? And how many billions of people either don't have, you know, and this is what's interesting about the conversation about like, why is religion and spirituality much, much more popular in quote unquote poorer regions than they are in richer regions? Is because richer regions have more access to things to distract them from the core questions of humanity.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I think the distraction is a big, like being fielded from our vulnerable, like it's really easy to think, oh, you know, I got this cool house around me and a phone and a car. And like, if there's a terrible storm outside, like, okay, I'll just go inside, turn on the heat, it won't be too cold. Or if it's hot outside, turn on the AC or whatever, and just like not be viscerally connected to how both awesomely beautiful the world is, but also how awesomely treacherous and dangerous it is, that like the reality of existence for most of human history and for most of humans even today is that it is scarce, brutal, and short. And like, so when you are viscerally connected to the severity of survival on this planet, then like that understanding, having some thing that helps you connect to deeper meaning and purpose in your life, and having that overarching story that you make sense of your life within, that's like a necessity. That's not a luxury.
Yeah.
For those of us in the Western world, the developed world, where we do have access to so many material luxuries, then that removes that piece of like necessity from knowing what is the biggest story that my life is nested inside of. You know, there's like layers of story. You know, am I a person? Am I a husband in a relationship? Am I a member of a community? Is my community part of a nation? Is my nation part of a larger global world? Okay. And then is there something that's bigger and even above and beyond that? You know, do I exist as someone who is a contributor to this project of human knowledge through science? Do I exist as someone who is in search of deeper meaning through philosophy or religion? Like, all of these things are, they're big stories. They're, you know, meta stories that if you believe in that whole story and that system of stories, then that tells you who you are and what is it that you're supposed to do. Like if you understand the story that you're inside of, then your character arc becomes clear.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, we do have the luxury of playing with these big meta story questions a lot more. We don't have to, you know, lock into one early on and just go with that one and really,
fingers crossed it's going to work out.
Yeah. Hopefully that one's the best one. There, it just creates a lot more room for that exploration. I think that the traditions that really have the closest relationship to base reality are the ones that people end up coming back to over time the most.
Yeah.
I'm definitely biased. I locked into Christianity early on, but I think I was very fortunate to be exposed to a flavor of Christianity that I realize now is pretty rare. That there are not that many people who would call themselves Christians who really are in search of following the example of Jesus instead of just building a religious system that makes people feel better without actually leading them to sacrifice. I think that that's where I landed, but really just by blessing of being exposed to having a great mom and dad who, even though there's a lot of stuff about their life that was messed up, knew that when the chips are down, we're willing to pay whatever price is necessary to be fully committed to what is true and serving people to advance the cause of that truth. I do think that principle generalizes across a lot of other things. And I think there are really important insights that are contained in lots of the durable religious traditions and philosophies, whether it's, the Buddhist tradition or Stoicism. Like, I think a lot of those things are very powerful distillations of human wisdom over many, many thousands of years, especially distillations of wisdom that was hard won through the most brutal experience. Like, we like to think of people who lived a long time ago as dumb because we're dumb. One of the, best ways, if you've experienced this in your own life and have any wisdom, that you've realized that you acquire wisdom is through the most painful experiences. And if you understand how people a long time ago lived, you realize that they experienced a lot more painful circumstances than we experience today by and large. And so their insights about the meaning of life usually were harder fought and harder won than anything that's been developed more recently and are more durable. This is the concept of Lindy that Mr. Nassim Taleb likes to talk about. So I think that's why those insights really do continue to ring true, because, for the most part, humans are today the same as we have been for thousands of years now. I still think that the example of Jesus, like if you read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, especially if you understand enough of the history to hear those books the way the original audience would have heard them, that there's no other character in all of, religion, philosophy, or fiction that lives the way that he lives and sets the example that he sets and calls people to a higher standard than he calls them, which is why I've stuck with Christianity for all of my adult life, even through times when I wanted to walk away and decided that I didn't want to be a Christian, but I couldn't stop believing because there were some fundamental truths that were just undeniable. So anyways, that's for me. And I think it's great to invite people when they are ready to wrestle with some of those fundamental questions of what is meaning, that a lot of people have found the deepest answers to those deepest questions in the faith tradition of Christianity. And so it's definitely something that I think people should look at. I think that it's true, and I think that it offers the maximum amount of meaning to life. But I'll also say that there's other ways to, like, just feeling useful is a huge way that people can pursue meaning. And that is a completely separate axis from philosophy or religion or spirituality, that people can also pursue meaning. And I think this is something that especially drives entrepreneurs. I think more people, it's much broader than just entrepreneurs, that whether it's, you know, serving people in your local homeless shelter or working with people who have special needs, like, there's so many things that you can do to serve a particular type of person that you specifically just can't, like, that you feel alive when you are with them. And that is also something that I think is universally human and is a far too neglected source of pursuit of meaning, that some people just intuitively understand that exist to help other people. And then they kind of gravitate towards who are those specific people that they exist to help. And that's one of the things that I'm looking forward to, that growing, because, like, that is the underlying mechanism by which society as a whole, like, the number of people that are doing that in society, that percentage is, I think, one of the most fundamental driving forces that pushes, you know, the higher that percentage is, the faster that society as a whole is improving and life for all humans is getting better.
Yeah. Yeah. I think AI is going to do all of that. I think it's going to allow the individual to find their journey to the core truth of their existence, you know? And it's like, it's weird. It's like, you know how, like, the woke thing was like, well, you have to speak your truth. You have to speak your truth. What's hilarious is, like, when it comes to this, I feel like, is there a core truth in reality? Is there one specific reason why everyone exists? You know, is that one journey equal to everybody? Right. And I think that is going to be the thing we're going to have to all of us go through in the coming two decades, is a re-examining of what it means to be alive and what it means to exist. Whichever journey you want to go through. You went through your own journey. I'm going through my journey, right? Like, you know, if I want to speak about on my behalf, I'm having a tough time resonating with the story of Christianity personally. But for me, it's like, but I'm so open to the ideas and the teachings of not just Christianity, but a lot of religions around just being a good person and taking care of those that are lesser than, and doing everything you can to be a good human and to sacrifice, right? Like, those are really, really powerful, tried and true lessons that humans have endlessly benefited from, that become like a forcing function for them to achieve not just meaning and, like, happiness and joy and connection, but also it's a fucking forcing function for getting shit done. Because it's like if you're doing it for the right reasons, it's so much easier to do. It's so much easier to navigate through the hard times if you find the right reason, right? So it's like, okay, so ultimately AI is going to help people if they so choose. This is where the conversation gets very complex, which is, we should say for another day because I'm about to piss my pants. I got to go. Is how will AI enable this? Is it going to be a time suck for people away from that? Or is it going to be an enabler for people to go on that journey? And that is the question of the next 2 decades. How will AI influence that? Is it WALL-E or is it a renaissance in...
Do you want the short version? For 80% of people, it is the time suck. It's the WALL-E future. For 20% of people, it is the superhero cape that empowers them to reach untold heights. And the journey of humanity is how those two groups of people, that tension between them grows and morphs as they go in their different directions.
Someone in 2045, if you're watching this, please clip this and put it on your social media thing of your choice and see if Hans is right or wrong. See you in 20 years. Bye.